Right, let's start the Mishnah, the bottom of Kuf Amud Bet. We'll just review that Mishnah quickly and then get into the Gemara. So, Hamimai Enet, Hashnia Vailonit. So, you have a woman who is does Mion, or Ishnili Orayot, and a Ilonit, a woman who's unable to have children, Elam Ktuba, Velo Peirot, Velo Mizonot, Velo Belaot. So in each of these cases, they do not have a ksuba, they do not have peros, they don't have mizonos, and they do not have blaot. Now, at least two of these cases, by mema'enet and ilonit, you have what's okir kedushin biikara. Right? It's as if the kedushin never took place. One, because ilonit, because it's kedushay ta'ut. Right? And mema'enet, because that's the whole point of mion. Mion is a way for a woman to be okir, the kedushin biikara. And the shnia, which is derabanan, means arayos derabanan. So in that case, even though the kedushim are tosveis midoraisa, and midoraisa being a valid marriage, the chachamim were kones in these cases to try to dissuade the woman from getting involved in such a marriage or staying in such a marriage. So they don't have iksuba. They don't have, she doesn't get peirot. Rashi says, what does it mean she doesn't get peirot? Din peirot. She doesn't get din peirot. What is she getting in exchange for peirot? Right? In the nixei malug, when she brings in the nixei malug, the baal gets to eat peirot. What does he get in exchange for that? It's pir kona. He has to redeem her if she is taken captive. So that's, she loses that right to have him redeem her when she is taken captive. And Rashi says it's ktanai ksuba is ksuba. But the ktanai of ksuba is the same as a ksuba, and therefore just like she lost her ksuba, she lost the tonight, suba in this case. Rashi does bring an alternate pshat down. I think that's the one I mentioned yesterday. That he doesn't have to pay for the next day maluk, the pears that he eats.
That's a knas.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you look down, bro, afilu hachi, it's Rashi, it's right across from my Mishnah in the Gemara. He says, afilu hachi lo yishalem peirot, titznai ksuba ksuba, it's like ksuba, ki hechi de kantzu rabbanan to lo gavya nechsei tzona barzel, shechnisa lo mishalo. Just like she can't go get back her nechsei tzona barzel, but toras ksuba, kantzu anavi, lo shalo tigbe aminei peirot cha'achal, but titznai ksuba. She can't go back and ask for all the peirot that he ate during the, because of tznai ksuba. She'll parry. Shu tznai bezdin. She'enu kato b'shtar aktuva va'avdin peirot. Chen mezonot nami. And also mezonos, tznai ksuba, ninu, all of these items, she will not have the right to either collect or get those benefits that are entitled to her through the ksuba. All right. Below bala'ot. These are the bala'ot are worn down clothing. So which blaot are we talking about here? Rashi mentions shkakei bigadim, worn down clothing, shevia lo b'shuma, that she brought in with an assessed value. Lo b'shumhu, eino machzirim lo b'tziyata, that he brought in an assessed value. He doesn't have to return them when she leaves. I mean, he doesn't have to return these clothing. Because even though technically he's not going to return her tzon or barzel, nevertheless he doesn't have to return the blaot either. All right. And if you look in Tosfos lo blaot, makom acher perish Rashi, mashenoter mishchakei begadim, that was left over from worn down clothing. Vomer Rebbe, dimken avle meimar blaoteha kayamin, right? That she gets her blaot. So that can't be the case over here. So when he says blaoteha, it means that which is the amount, the value that has been worn down, not the leftovers that are left over afterwards, but rather the value that's been depreciated over here. All right. So in either case, the general rule is here: she's losing her ksuba and her tnai ksuba, anything that's involved with the ksuba. Okay. Im mitchila nas'ad shem ilonit. If he originally took her as a wife, and knowing that she was unable to bear children, ish lak tuba. Then she has a ksuba because, right, then there's can't claim of kedushay tos. You can't claim that the kedushim were done by mistake. Alright, Amano the Kohen Gadol, Grusha B'chalutza the Kohen Hedjot, Mamzer B'netina L'Yisrael, Bat Yisrael L'Natin Ulu Mamzer. So all these are instances of invalid marriages, Minha Torah, but they're only invalid by Isser Lav, they're not invalid by Isser Kares, and therefore the Kedushin are Tovsim, in all these cases, Yesh La Ksuba. In all these instances, she does get a Ksuba. So what's the difference? Why? In the first cases, do we say that she loses her Ksuba and she gets nothing? And over here, she gets her ksuba. And that's because who is at fault here? I mean, who's at fault and who loses out over here? By all the first cases of Memenet, Shnia, and Ilonit, right? She's the one who's going to encourage him to stay, and therefore we were Koneis her to try to force the situation to unwind. Whereas in the latter cases, she already is puzzled from these marriages. She becomes a chalala from these marriages. Her children will be affected by these marriages, meaning that there'll be a mamzer, the children, or there'll be kohanim chalalim. In each of these instances, there's already she already is feeling the pain, I guess, of being in this invalid marriage, whereas he doesn't feel the pressure of being in this invalid marriage, and therefore we put the pressure on him rather than on her. So if you look in the last Rashi, Amana the Kohen Gadol, Yesh la ketuba, b'nei shehi psula. She's puzzled in these cases. Vivladapso, and her children are puzzled. Ayudain is suing because of these marriages. Lefichach, Eda Margilato. It's not her that's encouraging the marriage to persist. Elohu Margila, that he is the one wanting to continue the marriage because he doesn't look to anything. Mashad Ali Naselo, and he tries to encourage her to marry him. Fichach Kansu Oto, Litain Ksuba. So if they put the knas on him that he has to pay everything out. He has to pay the Ksuba, he has to pay everything out.
But he was already koneis her al das haksuba. So how's that a knas? Because he's got to be motzi her and give her the ksuba.
Right.
That's a knas.
Knas is that even though it's an invalid marriage, nevertheless he still has to. We're going to try to force him to divorce her. And nevertheless, we say that he's chayev to. Even though she's almost equally at fault here, in the sense that the invalid marriage is invalid from both sides, right? So that generally it should be there should be no ksuba over here because it's an invalid marriage.
One might think you should increase the amount of the.
Or even make it more than it's normal, right? To create a knas, right? I guess, but do you see the other cases she doesn't get a ksuba at all?
It's just the fact that we're trying to force him to divorce her, and yet still
right.
He has to pay the ksuba.
Exactly. Even though she's equally at fault, I think that's the more important thing. They're both at fault here. It's not that both of them are restricted from this marriage, and yet nevertheless, he has to pay the ksuba. Whereas in the first cases, even though. Well, there. I mean, depending on who it is, some of them she's by Shnia the Arias, where they're both at fault. Also, there she loses her ksuba. All right. Rav Tani, Rav learned Ketana Yotza beget in la ksuba. A Ketana that gets divorced, even with a get, is not entitled to a ksuba. V'chol shekein me'ma'enet, and certainly a Ketana who rejects the marriage. Shmuel Tani in our Mishnah me'ma'enet only when she rejects the marriage in la ksuba. Ava Yotza beget yesh la ksuba, but if she gets divorced. In a normal way, then she's entitled to a ksuba. As the Shmuel Tamei, Shmuel goes according to his own reasoning. Damas Shmuel Memeenet in la ksuba. That a Memeenet does not get a ksuba. Yotza beget yesh la ksuba. One who gets who gives a full get, then she is entitled to a ksuba. Memeenet lo paslam in achim. If she performs a miyun, then the other brothers are not restricted from her because it was oker kiddushim meikara. And she's not possible in the kuhuna, meaning there's no divorce here. She's not a grusha. Right? Yotza beget, if she went out with a get, paslam in achim, then she's restricted from marrying the brothers because of a riot. Paslam in a kuhuna, and therefore she's a grusha, and a grusha is not entitled to marry a kohenet.
Why would, if a ketana is ending the marriage, why would she ever do it through get rather than mema'enes? I'm assuming that we're talking about someone who
she's not
who
so
can't do mema'enes.
No, but he could be ending the marriage. He could be giving a get. He can't create mion, and he's wanting to.
He initiates the divorce.
Right, he can give a get. Right, so do that.
Even if he wants to, okay.
Right, then.
Right, but even if he wants to give her a divorce, then if she sees that he's going to give her a divorce, she could just be
mema'enes. Yeah, she's a ketana. I mean,
I was saying no, because that way she's still, she could still marry.
But then she loses her ksuba. Right, that's the difference. She'll lose her ksuba in that case. Whereas if she gets a divorce, she's entitled to her ksuba according to Shmuel.
It depends whether we hold like Rav or Shmuel.
Right, exactly. All right, mema'enet, ena tzarich lahamtim shlosha chadashim. A woman who's mema'en doesn't have to wait 3 months. In general, we say that because of lo plug, every woman has to wait 3 months after they are married to get divorced. But if Tana was unable to conceive, if she does Mion, then it's Opi Kedusha Mi'ikara, and the Chachamim were not gozer the low plug in that case, and therefore she does not have to, she doesn't have to wait 3 months to get remarried. Yotzeh Baget, Tzrich Lahamtiv Shlosha Chadashim. Nevertheless, if she gets divorced, even again, so she couldn't have children, and the whole point of Shlosha Chadashim was to be Ma'avchin, over here you don't really need that Avchana, nevertheless it's low plug, and she has to wait the 3 months in order to remarry. So Mara wants to know, Maika Mashmalan, Tanina the Kulu, right? What's Shmuel coming to teach us? We have Tanaic works that explicitly state all of this. One is Hamama Enet Beish, one who performs Mion, right? We know from Mivam is one who performs Mion. Who Mutar Bekrovotea? Mihi Mutarat Bekrovav. He is Mutar to her Krovim, she's Mutar to his Krovim, Lo Paslam in Akuna, and she's not Paslam in Akuna. So this is everything that Shmuel just said. Not only get, who asur bikrovotav, he asur bikrovav, they use a get, he's asur in her krovim, she's asur in his krovim, apostle minakuna, and she's no longer allowed to marry a kohen. Tzrichalamtim gimel chadoshim, and she has to wait 3 months. I'm sorry, v'tzrichalamtim gimel chadoshim, it's tzrichalay. We don't have the case of waiting 3 months, that's not explicitly mentioned in the Tanaic sources. And therefore, that's what Shmuel came to add for us. Shmuel came to add to us that waiting 3 months is also different between Mion and Get. By Get, she'll have to wait the 3 months. By Mion, she will not have to wait the 3 months. Lema, because that's not explicitly mentioned. Lema Kitanai, let us say the machlokus between Rav and Shmuel here is a machlokus tonoim. But that is Rabbi Lozer Mer Ein Maase Ketana Klum. Rabbi Lozer believes that what a Ketana, when a Ketana does anything, it's meaningless. I mean, none of her actions have any meaning. Ein Baal Zakei B'Mitziyata. If she gets married, her husband does not get her Mitziyot. V'lo B'Maase Yadeh, doesn't get her Alpa. V'lo B'Hafarat Nidareh, and he's not entitled to nullify her Nidarim. V'Ein Yosha, he does not inherit her. V'Ein Mitami Lev, it's a coin. It's not Mitami for her. So basically, that's what it means, Ein Maase Ketana Klum. Yeah, when a Ketana gets married, right? A Ketana may not get married minatora except if her father is marrying her off. If she is either divorced from that first marriage or her father had passed away, then the Kedushim are only Kedushim midirabbanan. She's only able to marry rabbinically. So Rabbi Lozer says a Maase Ketana is meaningless, that the Kedushim midirabbanan really do not forge a real marriage, and therefore all the entitlements of a real marriage do not exist. That's the basic principle here according to Rabbi Lazar. She is not his wife at all. But in order to separate, she needs Mion. She can't go out without anything. But even though she's not really his wife, she needs Mion to separate. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Maisa Ketana Klum, a Maisa Ketana has bearing or has meaning. Her husband will be entitled to her findings, umasi yader and her output, uvaharifarat nidareh, he'll be entitled to nullify her nidarim, v'yersha umitamela, he inherits her, and if he's a kohen, he is mitame for her. Klalo shel davar, the basic principle is hari ki ishto l'chol davar, she is his full wife, ela sheyotza b'miyun. The only thing that she's not his full wife for is that she can divorce through miyun, without using a real, she could separate through me, and without using a get, without using a full divorce, a full get to separate. So just as a side note over here, if the Kedushim, even Rabbi Shua has to agree that the Kedushim are only midirabbanan. So the most of the stuff is derabbanan here, meaning that whether he's entitled to her lost findings or her produce production, but the two that are deoraisa, how do you deal with them? First of all, hafaras nidareha, nullifying her nidarim. That is, she's taking a neder, which, if she's of the right age, is tofes midaraisa. That is a neder that would exist mina Torah. And he's only married to her mide rabbanan. And we're saying that he can go ahead and nullify that neder. How could that be? How could he nullify the neder if he only has rabbinic entitlement to nullify, and yet her Nidarim here are de'oraisa.
From what age?
Right, so that's, we say mufloch ha-samach le-gadol. From the time that they are close to being a gadol, min ha-Torah, if they understand their neder, then already their nidarim are tofes.
It was an arusa, both the father and the husband.
Right. But here the father's out of the picture because she's a, a ketana over here, because either she was divorced, which takes her father out of the picture, or she's a orphan, so her father's out of the picture. So here there's only one person in, and we're talking about even a nesua here. The case is not just simply an arusa, but even a nesua. So the question is, how does the husband have entitlement here?
When a father is mekadesh his young daughter, isn't it d'oraisa?
Yeah, that is d'oraisa. Then you have no problem here. But he's talking about the rabbanon here. They're because there's yom miyun. She's able to use miyun. She can't use miyun when her father marries her off. She needs a full-fledged get in that case. So they're arguing in a case where it's d'rabbanon, kedushin d'rabbanon. That's one. And number two problem is metamela. How is a kohen who's restricted in a Torah from being metame to a mace, how can he, except for the seven probim, how can he be metame to a woman who's only married to him d'rabbanon? She's only his wife, mid'rabbanon. How is he metamela? So the Gemara in Yevamos answers up. Right? The Gemara in Yevamos suggests two answers. One is by the wife, why the kohen can be metamela is because she's like a mace mitzvah. Right, it's a kohen. It's like a meis mitzvah. It's not literally a meis mitzvah. Meis mitzvah is someone who someone around to bury them. And the test is if you call out, nobody responds. That's how you know. So Mar says that what it's the equivalent of. She's in that equivalent position because if you call out, nobody will come to her rescue. Why? Because there's nobody to inherit her ksuba over here. Since there's no inheritors to her ksuba, nobody's going to take the responsibility of bearing her. And since, because he's going to inherit her ksuba, and since there's no one to benefit from her ksuba, then no one's going to take the responsibility of bearing her unless he takes on that responsibility. So we call it kari v'lohani. They call out to bury her and there's no one available to bury her because there's no one who is, in a sense, benefiting from her estate in any way. Right. I guess you could pay somebody to do it, but that's mikvod v'meis. That's to be osuk v'meis. So they already say that it's a meis mitzvah, that is being osuk v'meis. That's a good, interesting answer. Well, why don't they just pay somebody to do it? I wonder if that's a bekiyah on the kavod v'meis, meaning that the meis mitzvah is that you have to deal with it right away. You don't go out and find somebody, you have to deal with it right away. That's a good question. The other thing by Hafaras Nidareah is that, by definition, because she is his wife, she makes all her nedarim al, almost with an embedded tanai in it, that it's with her husband's approval. And because she's there acting as husband and wife, when she takes the neder, she takes the neder almost al tanai that that if her husband wants to nullify it, he'll be able to nullify it. Okay? So that explains those two cases. But now we have a machlok between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Elazar believes that the maisek tanai are basically meaningless. Only thing she needs is miyun to separate, whereas the Rabbi Shua believes the opposite, that she's a full-fledged wife, she's entitled to use miyun to get out. That's my closer. We're going to suggest what? That Rav and Shmuel are arguing in the same issues. Lema Rav, the Amar Rabbi Elazar, right? That Rav holds like Rabbi Elazar, Shmuel the Amar Rabbi Yeshua. Why does Rav holds like Rabbi Elazar? Rav says that both a get and it's Rabbi Elazar? Okay. Both a get and a miyun, right, and don't entitle the ketana to her ksuba. I mean, she loses her ksuba in both cases. So what do you would say? Rav holds like Rabbi Eliezer that maisik ketana ain't a klum. The whole marriage here basically is not a marriage. And therefore, no matter how you separate from the marriage, whether it's a get or a miyun, she's not entitled to ksuba because there's really no marriage here. Where Shmuel holds that, like Rabbi Yeshua, that there is a valid marriage here, midirabbanon. And if there's a valid marriage, midirabbanon, only when she does miyun, where it's okay, the kedushin miyikara, does she lose out her ksuba. Whereas where she gets a get, instead of doing miyun, that would entitle to her ksuba, just like the rabbanon, allowed her to get married, in kedushin derabbanon, they also entitled her, when she gets a get, to get a ksuba over here. Alright, so that's the Gemara's suggestion. That Lim Rav Kedamar Rabbi Eliezer, Bishmuel Amar Rabbi Yeshua. So Aliba, Gemara says no. Aliba, the Rabbi Eliezer, Kuli Amalo Pligi. Nobody argues according to Rabbi Eliezer. Even everybody would agree that in my sectana klom, and therefore she doesn't get a ksuba no matter what, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Ki Pligi, Aliba, the Rabbi Yeshua. They only argue in the position of Rabbi Yeshua. Shmuel, Ki Rabbi Yeshua. Shmuel holds, like Rabbi Yeshua, that you have a valid marriage here. So therefore, if you have a get, then she'll be entitled to her ksuba. If you only have miyun, then she's not entitled to ksuba. Rav, Rav's going to say, Adnan, lo kamar Rabbi Yeshua hatam ela midida l'didei. Right, Rabbi Yeshua says, all of these entitlements are from her to him. Whereas, aval midideh l'dida, but entitlements from him to her, lo, that does not take place. I mean, it's a one-way street. That's what Rav says.
Right, because Rishon said, right, Zakai ben Mitziyasav, Mazayadah, right, it's
right, all so he's entitled to all these items from her, whereas she's not entitled to anything from him. Why would you say such a thing? Why would you create a one-sided marriage like this? So that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, if you look at Rashi, I'd call him Kamar Rabbi Yeshua. Hey, Demaseh Kayamim. He inherits her, he gets her production, because then people will not marry her. The whole point here is to try to encourage suitors to marry her so that she will not be left to the wild, basically. She will not be left to be treated like Hefker. Because now she's basically on her own. She's a young girl. She's on her own. She'll be easily enticed. And therefore, we want her to be in a structure that gives her structure, right? That gives her a marriage that gives her structure.
Some protection.
Right. So in order to entice suitors to marry her, we gave them the ability to get all the benefits of marrying her without having to really pay out or to pay out what normally would be expected of her husband. That's what Rav says. That's how Rav explains to Rabbi Yeshua. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel will say, no, Rabbi Yeshua meant everything, that it's a full-fledged marriage in both directions. All right, further in the Gemara. Right, we heard in the name of Shmuel, and when she loses out over here, she only loses out her nixei milug. Aval nixei tona barzel itla. But if she has tona barzel, she gets back. So nixei milug are property that he's entitled to use, get the payros from. In the end, they go back to her. So that's where the chachamim rakonis that she doesn't get that property back. But the tona barzel, where they assess the value of the property up front, and then he took them and used the property, that is written into the ksuba, that assessed value, and he has to pay that assessed value to her. So Habi Bar Rabbi Papa asked, ahai, which part of the Mishnah are we talking about? Ilay Mama Ma'enet, if you're talking about Mama Ma'enet, Idi Itnehu, Idi V'Idi Shakla. If they still are in existence, then she gets both of them. V'Idi Letnehu, if neither of them are in existence, Idi V'Idi Lo Shakla. She doesn't get either of them, meaning that the din should be equivalent for Nixei Maluk and Nixei Tzona Bazel. If they're still around, she can get them back. If they're not around, he doesn't have to pay her back. So that's all. But why should there be any difference between them? So that can't be what Shmuel is coming to explain over here. Ella, what? Ella, Ailonit. It goes on in Ailonit. Idit Nehu, if they're still around, Idi Vidi Shakla. Idi Vidi Shakla, she get both. Idilet Nehu, if another man position, Ipchomi Vaile, should have been just the opposite. Nixei Malug to Bershuta Kaime, Nixei Malug, which are still in her possession, meaning that he's only getting usage rights, they're still in her possession. Kaima, they should come back to her. Iskla, they should come back to her. Nixei Tzona Barzel, the Labershuta, these are Tzona Barzel, which were given to him in an assessed value, but he gets to use them, then they are no longer at the Labershuta, Kaima Lesla, they're not in her possession, she shouldn't get them. So how could Shmuel's statement be that she loses out her Nixei Malug and does not lose out her Nixei Tzona Barzel? Over here, it should just be the opposite. She should lose her Nixei Tzona Barzel and not lose her Nixei Malug, because if we look at where she has more ownership rights, she has more ownership rights in Nixei Malug and not in Nixei Tzona Barzel. Ella Ashnia. It's going on the Shnia Leorais. That's what? The Kansu Rabbanon the Dida Bididei. Uledidei Bidido. They were Kones, each one of them in the others, where the other one has more rights. So where do they have more rights? So Rabbanan Lidida, where does she have more rights? She has more rights in the Nixei Malug. Nixei Malug, she still owns. He just has usage rights over here. So where are they Konis? They're Konis her that she loses the Nixei Malug. Something that she really owned, she loses. And the Nixei Tzona Barzel, what are Nixei Tzona Barzel? She gives over the property entirely to him. And he assesses the value, and then he's got to pay out the value if, for some reason, she either divorces him or if she if he predeceases her and she's entitled to ksubas b'nei zechrin, they'll get the full value of these tzon u'barzel. So those items, those are whose possession are they? They're his. They're just at an assessed value, but he really has control and ownership over those properties. So they're the chacham rakones that he has to pay back the tzon u'barzel, even though it would make more sense that he should keep them. Here they were kones him. So in order to dissuade either of them from entering into such a agreement, we create this knas where they should be more entitled, or where they should have more ownership. We nevertheless say that they lose out, that each one of them loses out in these cases. Amar Rav Simi Barashi, Shema Minad Rav Kahana, from Kahana we can learn, Aila Le Glima, that if he brings in a coat, Kahana Have, right, that is Karen, Velo Michseilo, and he's not allowed to wear it until it goes away. So Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Nachman peirahave." Didn't Rav Nachman teach us just the opposite? That a coat is peiros, meaning that a coat that you bring in, if it's nixei maluk, he's allowed to wear it. That's the usage of the coat, and therefore we consider like peiros and not like keren. The Rav Nachman pligo. Rav Nachman argues on this conclusion from Rav Kehan about the statement Amar Rav Ashi about the statement of Rav Kehan. All right. Are we good with that Gemara? Understood. The Gemara was challenged by the statement of Shmuel that this only applies to Nechsei Maluk. She only loses out her Nechsei Maluk, but does not lose out her Nechsei Tzon Abaza, which means that she loses out on the items where she still owns them, but he has usage rights. But she does not lose out on those items that she gave over entirely, where he's got full rights to them. That she does not lose out. So the Gemara tries to figure out what that statement of Shmuel was going on in the Mishnah, what was it referring to in the Mishnah. So we suggested at first it's going on the case of a memenet. Memenet, the Gemara says it doesn't make sense. They should be consistent. If the properties are still around, the memenet should get them back. If the properties are not in existence, she shouldn't get anything back. So there should be any inconsistency between nixei malug and nixei tzon abaza. By ilonit, we said that's kedushei taos, and we said that the conclusion should be just the opposite. If it's a problem, then she should get her toner. She should not get the toner basel, and she should get the next same look. Why? Because next same look she still owns, so she definitely get those back. Next same toner basel she doesn't own anymore, so why should she get those back? So it'd be the exact opposite of Shmuel's statement. So Mark concludes it's talking about shnei le'arayot. So why by shnei le'arayot she still have the same problem? Why by next same look where she's entitled, and next toner basel she's not entitled? What's going on? Mark says that's the knas. The whole knas here is the penalty is that you lose where you have more ownership. Where do you have more? The woman has more ownership in the nixei maluk, and therefore she loses out her nixei maluk, and the husband has more ownership in the tzon abazel, therefore he has to pay them out, because that's where he's going to lose. And that's the whole knas. The whole point of dissuading them from marrying is to create this situation where whoever has better ownership normally is going to end up losing out in this case. So that's what we explain this.
What's the machlokes between Rav Nachman and Rav Kahana? Meaning,
machlokes between Rav Kahana and Rav Nachman is how do you view a coat? When you bring in a coat to a marriage, what is the status of that coat? Is it keren? Is it really principal? If it's principal, then what do you have to do? You have to sell it. It's nixei maluk. You have to sell it and then buy a field with it, buy karka with it, so you can get usage out of it. But not that he can go and use the coat. We don't say that the coat is, like this is what Rav Nachman suggests. Rav Nachman suggests that the coat is the keren. That is the keren, and the uses. Yeah, we had Rav Nachman early on in the Masech, that's right. We did have Rav Nachman earlier. That the keren, the coat is keren, and his usage of the coat is the peros. Right, that the coat is peros, meaning that it's
in itself.
Right.
As opposed to a different type of thing.
What would be the keren? In relation to the coat.
I mean, technically the coat is the keren, but the usage, right. I mean, I think usage is the question here. The usage is the peros, that his ability to use it is the peros, And therefore, he can use them even though he's going to wear down the Karen.
Or Kahana wants to actually sell it and get the peros from
another, from a second.
We had them a focus by the different types of fields. It's a field, if it's a field that replenishes itself.
Right, exactly.
And as opposed to a field that will get completely used up. And Rav Nachman said, even if it's going to get completely used up, he's entitled to use it.
Right, we had this on Ayin Tet, that's what the Gemara was discussing over there, was all different types of items she can bring in. Do we consider them peros or keren in each of these cases? Do we force him to sell it? Or do we force him to, we could say that no, he can use it, even though he's using up a wasting asset. Nevertheless, whatever's left, there's a field left in the end. Like we're a mine. We had a mine and he's mining for it. There'll be a field or a sulfur pits, right? All these types of items to wear. So this is Rav Nachman over there said that the coat, she can wear it, and he can hand her back the used coat at the end, because that's her next, that's the Karen, that's her next name, Malog, and he used it, that was the Peros. So Rav Kahana is saying, no, that's not the case. The usage is the Karen, and therefore, since the usage is the Karen, he has to hand her back a coat that's a fully usable coat, and therefore, since he can't do that if he wears it, he has to sell it and buy property with it. Okay? All right. In these cases, none of them have a ksuba. That they only lose out the core ksuba of otosefet yeshlehen, but the tosefet ksuba they do have. It's tanya nami hachu. We have a price that says something similar thing. Nashim shem rochamim and lahem ksuba. Women that the chachamim say are not entitled to ksuba kagona memeenet vichabru teha. That's our cases in our mishnah. In lahem mona matayim. They do not have core ksuba of otosefet yeshlehen, but the extra that was added onto the ksuba they are entitled to. Nasim shem rochamim yotzei shlobi ksuba. But women that go out without a ksuba. What's that mean? What's the difference between Ein Lahem Ksuba? Ein Lahem Ksuba is in a case where they're saying to her, do not do this, and we're trying to dissuade her from doing these items. Whereas Yotzei Kolo Ksuba is where he can force her out and not pay her Ksuba. What are those cases? Kigon Over Taldat, Vichabrutal. That's the Mishnah we had early on. Woman is Over Das Yehuda, Dat Yisrael, someone, right? All the cases that the Mishnah had where a man's entitled to divorce his wife without giving her a Ksuba. Ein Lahem Tosefet. In that case, it's when she gets divorced, she's not only not entitled to her core ksuba, she's not entitled to anything. And again, the difference would be in the cases over there, she is fully responsible. Where she refuses, the Gemara says over there, where she doesn't cover her hair properly, where she isn't Meiser, doesn't take off Meiser's and Trumas and Chala properly, all those items, she's the sole problem in the marriage right now. I mean, at least halachically, the sole problem in the marriage. And therefore, when he gives a get, she's not only not entitled to her ksuba, she's not entitled to her tosefet ksuba. Over here, even though they're both involved in the marriage, and we're putting pressure on her because she's the one who's going to carry the marriage because she doesn't lose out in it, nevertheless, we say they're both at fault. Right? It's not that he's innocent in Shnios Larais. It's not like, not in these cases where, or Mama Enet, or Elonis, where Oker, the ksuba me ikara, right? Therefore, it's not like she did something wrong. It was something where it didn't work out. And therefore, they're somewhat equally responsible. So therefore, she loses out her Iker Ksuba, but she does not lose out her Tosefet Ksuba in those cases. Now, last case, but Yotze is...
What's it mean, divorce without Ksuba? Is it actually possible to have a divorce without Ksuba?
Well, they're two different documents. A get is Girushin is the halachic prescription in a Torah, right? To get divorced, whereas a Ksuba is the... what the woman's entitled to get when she is divorced. Right?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
What she's entitled to get.
Yeah, right. All right. Then, Vayotzeis Mishum Shemra, a woman who gets has to leave because of a case of Motzi Shemra, that means, in this case, means that she was Mizana, right? She was Mizana Tachas Bala. Then, Notelis Mashaflanea Vayotza. Whatever's there, she takes, and that's it, meaning that she doesn't get anything more. That Mixay Malug, whatever's left over of Mixay Malug, she takes and goes, and she's not entitled to anything else. Misayle Rav Huna, this helps Rav Huna. Dam Rav Huna Zinta Lohefsida Blautel. She's Mizana, she doesn't lose out Blautel Kayamim, meaning that whatever is left over, that in the Mixay Malug, she's entitled to take out with her. Tana Takameh Rav Nachman, we have a Tana that's spoken in front of Rav Nachman, Zinta Hefsida Blautel Kayamim, that if she's Mizana, she does lose out her. Leftover minik same look. Amleim he zinta klea keleha mizanai. So she was a zana, but what? Her kelim were not mizana, so why should she lose out on those kelim? Why should those kelim disappear? So tani lo ifsida blotel. No, it should read that she does not lose out her blotel kayimim, that which is left over minik same look.
That's kind of a funny question, though. I mean, obviously, there's many cases we're talking about where we're being kones, or to So.
Right. I don't know. Koni's hearing that by Motzi Semra, she's lost out, meaning that she's getting divorced because of her own actions. Right, right. I guess it is a knas. You can call it a knas, right? So, but the Nechzei Maluk do belong to her. She owns the Nechzei Maluk. I mean, these are items that she does own, and therefore we're saying if she owns them, if they're around, then she takes whatever she owns and goes. And
there are other cases where
she packs her bag and she leaves.
We've seen there are cases where we cause her to forfeit them.
Forfeit her Nechzei Maluk, that's only in Shnei Le'arayis, which is their Abanan, and probably there they needed to be Machzik the Knas, their Abanan. I assume that's what they were trying to do over there. Amar Rabbi Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zud Divrei Rabbi Menachem Stimto. This is Rabbi Menachem Stimto. Avach Chamerim Zinta Lo Evsida Belo Otea Kayamim. If she's Mezane, she does not lose them out. So that's why. So the Rabbi Yochanan, the statement, or the Tano, or the statement that we saw, that said that she does lose out, is the statement of Rabbi Menachem. And the Chachamim disagree and say she does not lose out, meaning that she's able to take whatever she can carry out, she takes, basically. Meaning that if she still owns it and it's her next Maluk, she leaves with that. Okay, Imit Chila Nasa, if he got married to her originally with the knowing that she is an Ilonit, right, then she's entitled to Iksuba. Amar Avun Ilonit, Isha Veina Isha. Ilonit is a wife and not a wife. Almano Isha Gemura, whereas a widow is a full wife. Ilonit, Isha Veina Isha. Why? Hikirba yesh laksuba. If he knew about it beforehand, she's entitled to ksuba. Lo hikirba in laksuba. Whereas if he does not recognize that she's a nilonis and finds out later on, then it's kedushay taus, and therefore she would get no ksuba. Almano isha gemura. And almano, if he marries her, meaning what's an almano here? It's a kohen, that kohen gadol that's marrying an almano, which is a improper marriage over here. Ben jalo hikirba yesh lo ksuba. Whether he recognizes it in her or does not recognize it in her, meaning he doesn't know about it at first, or he does know about it at first, she's entitled to her ksuba. Rabbi Yehuda mer achadzu achadzu isha veni isha. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says that they have the same status, that both a ilonit and a almana, that hikirba yesh lo ksuba. If he knew about it beforehand, she's entitled to ksuba. Lo hikirba it's kedushay taos, and therefore ain la ksuba. She does not get a ksuba. So, Meitevei, we have a question on the position of Rav Huna. Katsa b'cheska shehi kein, if he married her on the premise that she was such, v'nimtzeit shehi kein, and he finds that she is such, then yesh la ksuba, she's entitled to it. He knew about it, he accepted it, and therefore it's not a kedushay tos, and therefore he pays a ksuba. Ha stamo, had he not said anything, right? Ein la ksuba. Sounds like she would not get her ksuba. Lo, tema hastama ain la ksuba. No, that stam, if he didn't say anything, she would not be entitled to ksuba. Ela ema, so read like this. Kansa b'chezkat she'ein okein. If the second half of this braise, so that reads, what if he was koni sir that she is not an ilonis? Right, but nim says she kein, and then he finds out she is an ilonis, meaning that it fails the condition that he set out. Ain la ksuba, then she has no ksuba. Vastama, mai, if he didn't say anything, what would be the halacha? Isla, she would get it. So the Gemara says, Ad tani b'cheskat shehi kein. Then, if that's the case, why should he write b'cheskat shehi kein? B'nim says shehi kein. Yesh la ksuba, she would have a ksuba. Lishmin and stama, tell us stama, which is a much bigger chiddush. V'choser kein ha. And then, certainly, the case where he explicitly accepts it. V'od tani kansa b'yadua. B'nim says b'yadua. Yesh la ksuba. Right, kansa stam. Ein la ksuba. Right, so we have another braisa that says what? Explicitly, that if he takes her in and knows what the problem is, and we find the problem is there, she's entitled to ksuba. Kansastam, the braisa there explicitly says if he takes her in without saying anything, ain la ksuba. So that goes against Rav Huna. Right, Rav Huna said what? Rav Huna said where he explicitly makes the, it's explicitly he knows about what happened, hikirba, then what? She's entitled to ksuba. Where? Lo hikirba, if he didn't know about it, then she's not entitled to a ksuba. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says in either of these cases, she is entitled to a ksuba. So from the Brisa, you see what? See, Brisa says that only when he's biyadua, when he accepted it. Rabbi Yehuda says that, the other way around, I'm saying Rabbi Huna says by an almana to a kohen gadol, that what? Rabbi Huna says by an almana to a kohen gadol, she is entitled to a ksuba no matter what. Right, she gets a ksuba, whether he knew about it or didn't know about it, she's entitled to ksuba. Rabbi Yehuda says that just like Ilonis, if he knew about it, he accepted it, then she gets a ksuba. If he didn't know about it, then she's not entitled to ksuba. And we have a braisa that says what? Just like Rabbi Yehuda. We have a price that says just like Rabbi Yehuda, that if he explains, she explicitly stated what she was ahead of time and he knew about it, then if he marries her, she's entitled to her ksuba. Whereas if he's stam, if he didn't say anything and they didn't know about it, and then later on we find out she's an almana, then she's not entitled to ksuba, which supports the position of Rabbi Yehuda. So what are you going to do? It's a big question on Tiyuf, the Rav Huna Tiyuf, right? It's a question on Rabbi Huna. Huna masnitsen ad ite. The way our Mishnah is laid out caught Rabbi Huna off guard, in a sense, that he, who safar, means to come aflik by lonit. If you go back to the Mishnah, what does it say in the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, Ilonit, it gives one condition over there. It says, Ilonit yesh laksuba. That if, nasal l'shem Ilonit, if you married her because she's an Ilonit, yesh laksuba. She has a ksuba. Then the Mishnah goes on to Almana l'kohen gadol. So you see, the Mishnah only stated it about an Ilonit. It must be, it's implying that an Almana has a different din. So that's what Rav Huna thought. Rav Huna thought that Ilonit only has this din, but an Almana has a different din. So maflik, how does Sabra mean to come maflik by Ilonit, below come maflik by Almana, since the Mishnah differentiated by Ilonit and not by Almana, that if he knew about it ahead of time, she is entitled to her ksuba, therefore it doesn't not apply to Almana. Michlal de Almana, afilu bestama nami isla. The implication is that an Almana would be entitled to a ksuba, even in a case where he does not, even in a case where he does not know about it. Lohi, and that's not the way to read it. Kitani lo le'almana apukta de'lonis kai. That the Elonis was just an example on the Mishnah. That's not the only case. It's an example, just like an almana, just like an Elonis. It depends if he knows or not. So to by almana, it depends if he knows or not. Okay, so that was it. These last two sugyas quickly. We just had, when a woman is mezana, is she entitled to take out her nexei malok? So we had a machloka as whether she has to take it out, and in the end, the Gemara seems to conclude that she is entitled to take out her leftover nixei malug when she is mezana, even though she's not entitled to her ksuba, and she's not entitled to ksuba, not to tosefes ksuba. Right, we had earlier on, who's
that's
entitled?
The machloka is between Rabbi Menachem's team
and the Chachamim, right?
We hold like the Chachamim.
Right, and also Rav Huna Paskin that way, so.
If we're passing away, I think, because it was the opinion of the Chachamim.
Possibly, right? Very possibly. Very possibly, yeah. And then we said earlier on that the loss of Ksuba mentioned in our Mishnah is only the loss of the Ksuba, not the loss of the Tosefes Ksuba, except the cases, but the Mishnah we had earlier on, where a man can divorce a wife for cause. Those, in those causes, she loses not only her Iker Ksuba, she loses out her Tosefes Ksuba. Then over here, we just explained there was a machlokus between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, although we said that in the conclusion of the Gemara, Rav Huna's premise is mistaken. But the general question of the Gemara was, what happens when he knows about it or he doesn't know about it? So by Elonius, the Mishnah is explicit. If he knows about it, then she's entitled to her ksuba because he knew about the problem ahead of time. Whereas if he finds out about the problem later on, it's kedushei tos, and she's not entitled to a ksuba. The question was by Almana l'kohen gadol. Our Mishnah does not say anything about Almana the Kohen Gadol. So the question, Rabbi Yehuda says the halacha is similar to a Ilonit. The Mishnah only mentioned Ilonit as an example, but Almana the Kohen Gadol will be the exact same thing. If he knows about it ahead of time, she's entitled to Ksuba. If he doesn't know ahead of time, then she's not entitled to a Ksuba because it would be a Kedushei Tos. He didn't know that she was an Almana. Had he known she was an Almana, he would never have married her. Whereas Rav Huna says, no, the fact that the Mishnah explicitly stated Ilonis means to the exclusion of Almana. By Almana, even if he does not know about it, she would still be entitled to a ksuba. The Gemara rejects Rav Huna's position and says, no, that he was mistaken in reading the Mishnah this way. The Mishnah is really just an example, like Rav Huna said, and not a trying to differentiate between Ilonit and Almana the Kohen Gadol. Right, next Mishnah. Anosei et ha'isha pasko yimel kadesh yizonet bita chamesh shanim. Marries a woman, and she puts as a condition of the marriage that he has to feed her daughter for 5 years. A daughter from a previous marriage, he has to sustain her for 5 years. Chayav lezona chamesh shanim. He has to fulfill that obligation. Nisei la'achar. What happens if they get divorced, and she marries another man within that five-year period? Upaskimo kadesh zona bita chamesh shanim. And this next guy, she also has him agree that she'll support the daughter for 5 years. Chayav lezona. He has to feed her. The second husband has to feed her. The first husband cannot say that when she lives with me or when you live with me, then I'll feed her. But now she's living with another guy, has support over there, then I'm not going to feed her. Right, he has to take her mezonos over to the place where her mother is. Two of them shouldn't say, Look, basically she wanted is an agreement that we feed this daughter. Now she's gotten two men to agree to feed the daughter.
So
between
we'll split the cost
to do this. One of them has to actually feed her and the other one has to pay out monetary obligations. Why? Because this condition in the ksuba is not, it was a contractual obligation. It was not premised on the ksuba. It was a obligation to feed this daughter for 5 years. It didn't say, if I'm married to you, if I'm not married to you. It says, I'm going to feed her.
Or
five
she
years.
Doesn't have it from somewhere else.
Exactly. So Nisa is a bow, notin la mazonot. If the bow, I'm sorry, Nisa is, if she, the daughter, gets married, a bow, notin la mazonot, her husband has to feed her, obviously. Vehei notin la dame mazonot. These two stepfathers have to also pay her out money. So let's imagine this case, right? Her mother got married twice, so she has two stepfathers. In both of these cases, the stepfathers agreed to pay her mazonos for 5 years. After that, she goes and gets married. So she's entitled to mazonos from her husband. So now she's getting mazonos from her husband, and she'll be entitled to demay mazonos from the two stepfathers in this case.
And with regards to her husband, what's the status of that demay mazonos that she's entitled to from the...
do they belong to her? Do they belong to him? You mean, yeah, possibly. It could belong to him. Okay, may to... Right, so if they die, this is the earlier case in the Mishnah, when the husband dies and you have an estate left over, we said before that the boys collect the estate and the girls eat mizonos, but the girls only allowed to eat mizonos from nechasim b'nei chorim, from free and clear property. She can collect even from encumbered property. Why? Because she has a contractual obligation to pay her food. It's not part of the ksuba, it's a contractual obligation. She's like a creditor here. So what do you do if you're smart? Which is what he should have placed the condition in it, that I'll feed your daughter as long as we're married. Meaning that basically, don't make it a stam obligation to feed the daughter, but rather only when we are together is your daughter entitled to her mizonos. Itmar. I have a question. Itmar, where's Stephen? Omer lechaveiro, chayv ani lechamana. I am chayv to you, 100 zuz. Rabbi Yochanan amar chayav. He has to pay it. Well, actually, because I'm our potter. That is potter. Hey, chidami, what's the case? Idamar lehu atem adai, you are my adim. Meaning that he takes this guy, I owe this guy 100 zuz, and he has two adim standing there. Right? Then he says, you should be the adim that I owe him this money. Then, my time at the Reish Lakish is to go potter. Why does Reish Lakish say he's potter? He's just obligated himself. He admitted he owes him money in front of adim. Why is he potter? Idil amar lehu atem adai, if he doesn't say to other people, be my adim that I owe him money, then my time at the Rabbi Yochanan to mechayiv. Why does Rabbi Yochanan say that you're chayiv to pay, meaning that he just said something to him. He didn't mean it. He was saying it as a joke. He was saying it. Sarcastically. It wasn't that he was trying to obligate himself, because if he did, he would have brought in Adim. So why does Rabbi Yochanan say he's chayiv? So the Gemara says, lo lam lo tkamar lehu. He did not say to them, atem adai, that you are my Adim. V'hachav amai skinan. So why does, if they're not Adim here, why is Rabbi Yochanan chayiv? Darmalei chayiv ani lecha mano b'shtar. Right, I am chayev to you money in a shtar, and he gives over that shtar in front of Eden. Rabbi Yochanan says it's chayev alima milso the shtar. I command them to atem Eidim dummy. That by giving it a shtar, that gives more tokif, gives more force to the statement that he's making, and therefore it's as if he's asking the Eidim to testify that he's chayev for this item. Alima milso the shtar. A shtar is just like saying it. He can be joking. Just like he gives a shtar as a joke, he can give... I mean, say, because he says it as a joke, he can be... I'll give a shtar as a joke. So, just what is this case here exactly? What exactly is the case of the shtara? So, if you look in Rashi, Hachamai Skina B'shtara. So, Masrlo shtar b'faneinu. He gave over a shtar in front of us. V'katavo ani chayav l'cha mana. And he wrote in it that I am chayav to you a mana. V'afo pi shektav yadohu. Even though it's his handwriting. So why isn't his handwriting enough? We've said in other places that his handwriting is enough to obligate him. So why don't we say over here that he has his handwriting, so therefore he should be chayim. Even though it's his handwriting, he didn't sign the document. So the deficit here is what? That he didn't put his signature on it. So he fills out this whole shtar, says, I'm chayim to you, hands the shtar, but does not sign the shtar. So there you have Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And the reason that is because he didn't sign on it.
Perfectly reasonable. He could have written it with- decided at the end not to give it, and the guy chapped it.
Right, right. There are reasons, but here the problem is that he's giving it to him in front of Edim, right? Even though he's not designating the Edim, he's handing over Shtar in front of the Edim. But it could be. You're right. It could be a condition.
Yeah, I didn't sign it.
I didn't sign it because we weren't ready. I was going to give it to him to hold until we were ready to do the real transaction or something like that. There are reasons. Right? You could say I was joking. There are things that he can do to say that it wasn't for real. But the fact that without a signature, you don't have a force enforced document.
Maybe he intended to give him one, then he gave him the other,
and it was worth it. Fair. That's fair. There are all situations that you can come up with that he's giving it to them, even though he's not serious about it, or it's not here. He didn't sign it. So that's the case here. So Tanan, so Tosus has a little bit of Tosus. You look in the middle of the Tosus. Damar lechayv, and he says, "V'lo mari namik." Like Rashi says, "Chotav lo ani ploni chayav lechamona." It's not like he wrote that in a shtar. Tanamik chotam tachtav dami. It's the equivalent of a signature. When he writes in his own handwriting, "I am chayav to you," then you don't have to sign because that's kechatimas yado. Therefore, he has to be here. The case has to be where. I'm not exactly sure what he writes in the shtar, according to Tosfos, that he has to write. Tosfos' case, I don't know what he wrote exactly in the shtar. Because he says, it's not writing on Ani Chayav Lecha. I don't know what he's actually writing in the shtar, according to Tosfos. Good question. All right, let's finish up here. It's not. We have a Mishnah Nosei at Aisha.
No, it's Lomar Chikazal Khaimi Khamana the Khasam Tahtab.
No, the Ha Nami Ki Khasam Tahtab Dami. That's as if he signed below it.
Is that further down? Right, so the difference is I think the first case he's just writing, he's not writing his name, he's writing I am Chayav to you. And then you have Ksav Yado, but as opposed to the second case where he says, I, Shaul Slodowski, and...
I guess that's the difference. Rashi says, Ani Chayav L'Chamana, and they didn't sign it. That was what the case is here over here. Tosel says that even in that case, that's equivalent to him signing because it's own handwriting. Must be the other cases where he gets someone else to write it. That's what Tosel is going to say. Someone else writes that Ani Chayav L'Chamana, it's someone else's handwriting, and then he hands that shtar over to the person. So therefore, that's what the case is going to tell us, right? It's not, so then you don't have his handwriting, and you don't have his signature. So that's why you can't take out the shtar. It's a full force shtar, but rather you have to have the edim in force here. And the edim, the question is, when he hands over a shtar, is that as if he turned on the edim or not? Okay. It's not. I know that the Yishua Pascha Yimo Lazunet Bita Chameshanim, our Mishnah, where he agrees to feed her for 5 years. Chayav Lazona Chameshanim, my love. What's the case here? Ki Hai Gavna. Isn't it like our case over here that he... He said he basically handed her shtar, saying that I am obligated to feed your daughter for 5 years, and even though there's no signature or there's no screening on Rashi, it isn't his handwriting over here. And nevertheless, we say what that it's an obligation, so that would support Rabbi Yochanan's position. Slo b'shtari p'sikta, ukitrav gidol. No, this is something that was put into the Tanoim. If it's put into the Tanoim, where's the Kinyan over here? That's our problem. Our problem here is, where is the Kinyan to obligate him in this item? Just because he wrote the shtar, there's no signing of Eidim, there's no Kinyan, so how is he obligated to pay out the food? So Gemara says, Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, Kama Ata Noten Levitcha Kach V'Kach, Kama Ata Noten Levitcha Kach V'Kach. This is the Tanaim, like the real Tanaim, where what we agreed on how much we're going to give to your daughter, how much you're going to give to your son, and then they sign the document. Even though that document has no Kinyan involved in it, nevertheless, it's enforced. Why? Amdu v'kidshu kanu. It's included in the Kiddushin. The Kiddushin, the marriage, is enough to lock in or solidify the document as a valid document. Hey, d'varim ha'niknim be'amira. These are items that are nikneh be'amira, with only speaking and not with a physical Kinyan. So it's true in law today. I know in New York it works this way, that when you get married, even though in general when you want a contract to be enforced, you need consideration. You need something to be given in order for the contract to work. By marriage, the act of marriage itself is the consideration, but it's enough of a force to make a contract binding. So that you can force something that you don't need consideration, but you can have a contractual obligation entered into because of marriage. So the same thing over here. The marriage itself, even though there's no kinyan in these contracts or in these items, but since they were done in the context of marriage, The act of marriage then obligates the individual to fulfill the contracts, even though there's no kinyan, because that's the gemira sadas, right? If you say kinyan is gemira sadas, getting married is the gemira, stands in as the gemira sadas here to make these contracts valid contracts. I'll stop here.